still.
It was 2014 when I was first here. My daughter Hannah was with me, and I was able to come back in 2016, spend some time with you, and it's just really, really wonderful. I can see the church is growing. It's just so great to see. Love that Kent's here working, and God's been so good to you guys. I hope you see the power of God in your life. I hope that you see the power of God in this church and even in this community. The power is there, and we're going to talk a lot about that this week. You're encouraged to open your Bibles to Psalm 23. You probably know or maybe even can quote Psalm 23, but we're going to begin there. Before we do that, just want to tell you a little bit about where we're headed this week. Usually these topics change a little bit over time throughout the week, we'll see, but as of now, here's where our focus is. We're going to talk about building generational faith, and I just need to take a minute and tell you what that means. I think you probably already know, but it just means that I'm pretty sure that everybody in the room right now, I mean, feel free to do like this if I'm way out of line already, we just started, but I'm pretty sure everybody here wants to get to heaven. Is that a pretty acceptable statement? I mean, you want to get to heaven. I mean, that's what you're here to do. You're here to get to heaven, and I'm also pretty sure that everybody in your family, you want them to get to heaven too. You want your children to get to heaven. If you are blessed by God to be a grandparent or a great-grandparent, you want to see them grow up devoted to God, and that's probably the most important thing in your life. If your children are faithful, you want them to stay faithful, and if your children have fallen away, you just want them to come back. I'm 40. I don't know if that's old or not. It just depends who you ask, I guess. But already I can tell you there's just one thing left for me. If the Lord said, you're only going to get one more thing out of me, and that's it. That's fine, because there's only one thing left on the list. I have four kids, two teenagers, and two babies. Well, they're 7 and 5, 17, 15, 7 and 5. I just want to see them grow up faithful to Christ. And if the Lord allows me to see them bear children, I want to see those children fit. And I mean, I want nothing else. No, it doesn't matter. I don't have a bucket list. I don't need to see Stonehenges or whatever. I just want that. So you know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about how that works. There are a lot of elements, and that's why these lessons are kind of all over the place, but there are a lot of elements that come together that make that possible for your family. And again, if you've seen some of that breakdown, these are the tools that bring that back. So I just want you to take a peek up here. So far, here's the idea. Today, all three lessons today is about trusting in God. It's about fellowship and relationship with Jesus. It is not enough for you to know things about Jesus. I feel like churches in some form have failed kids in that we think that if we fill them with information about Jesus, then they're naturally going to be able to obey Jesus. That is not the case. In between knowing stuff about Jesus and really obeying Jesus is this magnificent space that means fellowship with Jesus. You need to be so connected with Him. So connected with Him that He is always in every room in which you walk. There's not a place you go, there's not a thing you do, there's nothing in your life in which Jesus is not a relevant, experienced, almost visible participant. When you build that, you can bridge the gap between knowing stuff and actually doing stuff. So we're going to talk about that a lot today. Humanism, unfortunately, is trying to erode this middle section. And boy, this evening, kind of a new thing, but I want to talk to you about the way you talk to God. I mean, we got to get bigger the way we talk to God. Now, as we get into the week, I want to spend a couple of nights talking about the church. The church has a big responsibility in that. The church you choose is about 80% effective in determining if your kids grow up to serve God or not. Have you thought about that? It's big, 80%. Well over the majority of kids are affected by the church. And then lastly, we're going to put together a few things that have to do with sort of a big secret. I'll just let you know, the big secret to generational faith is getting better every day. I mean, you can put that in your pocket. That's the big secret. And then at the end, we need to talk about the water. We'll talk about baptism. So that's a lot of stuff going on. But here's our focus. Our focus today is none of those five things you see at the bottom are going to make any difference if you are not experiencing fellowship with Jesus Christ. If you're not close with Him in a very personal, we're going to use really strange terms this week, like personal relationships with Jesus and feelings. And my hands may even go up. Do not weird out if my hands go up. But I'm okay with the fact that I'm asking for more from the Lord. So we're going to look at Psalm 23 to get started. There are so many ways to talk about Jesus, but it just doesn't get much better than the imagery of a shepherd. You are sheep, we are sheep, He is a shepherd. Now, in Bible days, that was a really powerful illustration. I've got some cool stories I could tell you about the Middle East and shepherds and sheep, but that's not going to mean a lot to you guys. I mean, you make orange juice here in Florida. You're probably not a whole bunch of sheep, maybe some sheep. But I do think that if you just think about what you know that there's a special connection between sheep and shepherd because, stick with me on this, shepherds do almost all the work. Shepherds are the smart ones. They're the overseers. They're the power. They're the influence. They make it happen. All sheep really have to do is not run off. I mean, that's basically the only job of a sheep is to just stay there. And I think that that's missing in our understanding of faith. I need you to know that Jesus is going to do almost all the work. He's going to make it all happen. It's the power of Christ that's going to sustain your family. You just got to stay in it. You have to stay relevant to it. And I think I can demonstrate this. Go to Psalm 23 and I'll read it for you. Probably you're familiar. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. I'm going to stop. I want to add this. Just hit me. Look for the verbs. Who's doing the work in Psalm 23? I want you to notice that. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Did you see who's doing all the work? The shepherd is the one who makes me lie down. He is the one who leads me beside the quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me. He prepares the table. He anoints me. Everything I am and have and can possibly be, Jesus is in my life doing that for me. So you say, well, do I have any role in this at all? Yeah, you've got a role in this. Verse 4, walk without fear. That's your job. It's not be powerful and strong and creative and self-made and independent. It's a bunch of baloney. All you've got to do is walk without fear. And verse 6, stay with him. Just stay with him. Walk without fear, stay with him. If you do that, he's going to do all the heavy lifting. And what I'm hoping is by the time this little section we have this morning is over, the relevance of Jesus' power in you and what you access by knowing that he's in the room is going to make all the difference on bridging the gap between what you know and what you're doing. A lot of people know the truth, are not doing the things of the truth. Would you agree with that? A lot of people know the truth, they're not doing the things of the truth. And we think, you know what we need to do? We need to go tell them the truth. No, you don't. They know the truth. Are you going to re-preach a sermon for the 97th time? What they don't know is Jesus. The presence of, that's what they don't know. That's what they've forgotten. So we're going to talk about Jesus as our great shepherd as he tries to help us understand that better. Where I really would like for you to go, and by the way, this is very hard to find. That is an actual picture of Jesus. Do you understand how difficult that was? The internet is a deep and incredible place. I will tell you one lie today. I just told it. John 10. I don't want to tell you about Jesus as the shepherd. I would be limited in that. I would be able to tell you in my life, here's the shepherd-like elements of Jesus, and it just wouldn't have the impact. I think the best thing that we can do, and really David's words in Psalm were great, but I think the best thing we can do is just let Jesus tell you about himself. When he came here to this earth, and for 3 years he worked this ministry, and it's been recorded in the Gospels, I hope you're reading the Gospels once a year, bar none, every year. Because you need to let Jesus tell you about himself. He makes some pretty compelling arguments about himself. When he says, I want you to think about me every day, and I want you to be with me every day, and I want you to experience my power every day, he's got some pretty compelling arguments. So here is one of those arguments. I am the good shepherd. So what I'm going to do is a bit of reading here. There's two pieces of imagery going on in John 10, and I only want us to focus in on one of them. You have Jesus as the shepherd, and you have Jesus as the door. So the shepherd is in 1 through 6, and 11 through 18. That's what I'm going to read for you. If you follow along, that would be great. I'm reading from the updated New American Standard Version. So if it reads a little bit differently, you'll understand what's going on. Let's read this and then have some discussion about Jesus. Verse 1, John 10, 1. These are the words of your shepherd. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him, because they know his voice. A stranger, they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech, John tells us in verse 6, Jesus spoke to them, but they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them. So let's move down when he picks it back up in verse 11. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand. He's not concerned about the sheep. Jesus says, verse 14, I am the good shepherd. I know my own know me, even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep, he says, which are not of this fold. I must bring them also. They will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. A couple more verses. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life so that I may take it again. No one has taken it away from me, Jesus says, but I lay it down on my own initiative. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I receive from my Father. There is a wealth of information about your Christ, Jesus, in this text. He makes the argument for you to be his sheep. Now, before we get into the elements of Jesus, I want you to see that there are a couple of other characters in this story. One set of characters in verse 1 are thieves and robbers. People who want you. They want you to follow them. You ever known anybody like that in this life? They feel a lot better when you're doing what they're doing. It may be family members of yours who says, I want you to come and do what I'm doing because it makes me feel better about what I'm doing. There are lots of thieves and robbers in your life who offer you blessings if you'll come with them, and they don't know the first thing they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. They're falling in a pit and they're going, please jump in the pit with me. They have no clue. Thieves and robbers, your whole life, young people, your whole life, peers, will try to get you to be like them. For their own gain. They don't care about you. For their own gain. So one of the things you need to know is Jesus is about to make an argument to say, you need to forget about them. And you need to listen to me. And the first thing he does is he says, I want to categorize them appropriately. They are thieves and robbers. They have no right to you. They have no right to you. And you need to make sure they know that. The second one, and I like this guy, the hired hand in verse 12. We'll get to this in a minute. Let's see what pops up when I do that. Okay, that's too far. The hired hand in verse 12. You know, he seems like a pretty good guy, old hired hand. He's watching those sheep. He's not a thief or a robber. He's a hired hand. But the problem is, he's a hired hand. So the first time some animal comes, and I don't know what animals attack sheep, some mountain lion or something comes, what's the hired hand going to do? He's going to take off out of there. Because after all, they're not his sheep. And hey, after all, they're just sheep. I don't know who the hired hand is. Preacher friends and I argue whether the hired hand's a good guy or a bad guy. I think he's me, so I'm going to say he's a pretty good dude. He's a guy who's in, and I want to help you, but there's a pretty good chance if life's on the line, I may flake out and run. I don't know. But I know Jesus won't. He won't. So here's what I would tell you before we get into the argument for Jesus. I would say be careful of thieves and robbers trying to sneak in and take you where they want you to go. But also just be mindful that hired hands like preachers and elders and parents and others, you know, we're trying to be good and help you out. We'll never be as strong as Jesus is. You need more than just that. And if the hired hand is a flake and a bad guy, well, stay away from him too. Now, let me tell you where Jesus is better than all that. First of all, I want you to imagine something. See if you can go with me on this for a minute. Right now, those two outer doors open. And then these two inner doors open. You're staring at me just like you are now, and those doors come flying open. And everybody looks back there. And in walks Jesus Christ. You know it immediately. Looks nothing like this guy probably, but you know it immediately. I mean, there's a light around him. There's a presence to him. Maybe he's just levitating. That would end the argument really quickly. But he comes through those doors. Can you feel that with me for a moment? He's in the room, because he's actually already in the room. I'm just giving you a visual of what is already taking place. He's in the room. And Jesus walks, and everybody's staring at Jesus. And he walks over to you, or you, or you. He walks one at a time. We're mesmerized. And he walks over to you, and he kneels down beside you, and he grabs your hand. Can you feel him? Got your hand. And he looks you right in the eye. And he says, I am Jesus Christ. I have great works for you to do. And it's going to demand dramatic changes in your life. Follow me. And Jesus lets go of your hand, and he stands up, and he walks out the back door. What are you fixing to do? What are you going to do? You're going to think, well, that was strange. You're going, I don't know what you're going to do. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to get up. If I'm sitting down, if I've got my family, I'm taking them, and we are following Jesus. You know, we say that we would do that, but you understand that everything I just described to you has already, I mean, it's already happening. I mean, you understand that, right? Jesus is in this room. Jesus is making appeals to you. He does want to be your shepherd. He does demand dramatic change. And he wants you to stop whatever you're doing and follow him. What I just described is happening already. Question is, are you ready to get up and do it? Really do it. You're only going to do it if you feel connected to him. Well, here's what I want to argue as we go through these next few minutes. Stay in John 10. What I want to argue in 4 points here is that if he did that, if he walked in and knelt down beside you and grabbed your hand, he would say a few more things than that. He would not just say, I'm Jesus, I want to change you, come with me. He would have some other things to tell you. And here's where we're going to start this. I want to show you 4 things about Jesus that he would tell you if he had that moment. First of all, let's begin with this idea, and then I'll give you the application of it. Look in verse 1, 2, and 3 again. What you need to know about Jesus is that he enters by the door. Verse 1 says, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. The first thing you need to know about Jesus is that he has the right to rule your life. Who believes that? It's a Bible class, I'm standing down here, I don't have my coat on, you're allowed to make audible sound and nobody's going to come get on to you. Do you believe that Jesus Christ even has the right to come in and tell you, hey man, nice hair, that is cool hair, get up, we're going? Does he have the right to tell you that? The first thing that you have to understand is what he's saying is, I own you. I have ownership of. I'm not afraid of words like ownership. I'm not afraid of calling myself a slave of Jesus. He owns me. And that's why he gets to walk up to the door and say, doorkeeper, please open the door. I'd like to go in and get my sheep. And the doorkeeper doesn't say, well, I'm going to need to see some credentials on that. Or, you know, I don't believe you. He says, come on in. Because why? Because they're yours. They belong to you. The first and most fundamental thing you need to know about Jesus is that you belong to him. Whether you're a Christian or not, you say, well, I'm not a Christian, I don't belong to Jesus. You belong to Jesus. What do we mean by that? Well, go back to John 1. We could pick a lot of places here, but go back with me to John 1. I'm pretty sure everybody in the room is enjoying existence at this moment. You live, you breathe, you have your being, you have a life. You've mounted up some years and you're hoping to have a few more. Do you understand that this has only happened? Not sure. This has only happened. How old are you? This is only happening because, what's your name? Jesse. Because Jesus made Jesse. That's the only reason he's here. He is only here because Jesus said, I want to create you. In chapter 1, it begins with this. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things, Jesse, Chris, everybody, all things came into being through him. And apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. That's important as well, because you can't just run away from Jesus and say, I reject all this. I'm going to go do my own thing. There is no own thing. There's no own thing. He made everything. Well, I'm going to go get with people who don't believe that. You still can't escape Jesus. He made all those people. And he made everywhere that you go. There's nothing that came into being that he did not bring into being. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. The light, that is Jesus, shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. Jesus is your creator, your maker. He is everything. John 14 builds on this idea. John 14, everything we are and everything we hope for comes only through Jesus Christ. You know this, John 14, verse 6, when he was talking about how he was headed up to heaven, and Thomas wondered what in the world that was about, and Jesus said, I am. You know the I am phrases in John. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. If you're alive, it's because he made you alive. If you ever find the truth, it's because you found it in Jesus. If you ever get to heaven, it's because he was the way you got there. He is your beginning, and he is your end. He made you, and he's coming to end this life one day as well. He said, no one comes to the Father lest they come through me. So if Jesus came up to you, he wouldn't say, Kent, I'm Jesus, I want to change you, come with me. He would say, Kent, I made you, man. I formed your substance in your mother's womb and gave you life there. I set forth your days. How old are you, Kent? It's okay. I've continued to put oxygen in your lung for 62 years. Everything you are, I put together. I want you to follow me. If you believe that you're only here because of him, he is your purpose for existence, there is nowhere he will go that you will not also go. Four arguments that he makes here. The first one is, I have the right to rule your life by the very power of your existence. You cannot escape that. You may not like it, but you cannot escape it. Here's a second thing. Go back to John 10. Here's a second thing. Let's stay in that same text. I'll just read verse 3 and verse 14. See if you can pick up on more. He's not just saying, I'm your maker and I have the right to you. He also says, verse 3, to him, John 10, the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. Look at it again in verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. I'm going to return to a phrase that I told you was coming a few minutes ago, so you can't act like it was a surprise. I get angry when our religious friends compromise the truth and then hijack really good phrases. And once they've hijacked them, I'm not allowed to use them. Well, I'm fighting back. I am in a personal relationship with my Lord Jesus Christ. If it's anything, it's personal. How personal is it? Well, on my end, it's pretty personal because he made me, and if I get to heaven, it's going to be because of him. But it's also personal on his side. He said, I know the name of every sheep. They're not just a flock of sheep. I know every single one of them. I know their names, verse 3. Verse 14, I know them. You may as well add words like, I know everything about them. You know the verses where it talks about how God knows the number of hairs upon your head, which in God's, you know, defense gets easier for him to do as we get older. But he knows. Why does the Bible say that? Who cares how many hairs are on your head? What's it saying? It's saying even the most impossible things to know. I mean, you don't know how many hairs are on your head. Most of you don't. Even the most impossible things that could never be known about me, like the number of hairs on my head, Jesus says, I know that. I know that because I know you. I know everything about you from a DNA level, from a single cell outward. I know everything about your code. I know everything that you think. I know everything that you feel. You think you think and feel things over here in a vacuum? I know your name and I know you. Luke 15. Luke 15 talks about the one who had strayed, Luke 15, and this attitude of redemption, verse 4, about the sheep. Do you remember the story of the man who lost the sheep? What an interesting little story. He had 100 sheep. He lost one. So what? What is one sheep out of 100? And sometimes we think about the church that way. What's one number on the board? You know, we're still doing great. That one number is a human being. And Jesus made that human being. And he knows every doubt, fear, and struggle of that human being. And he is devastated if they walk away from salvation. They're not just a number, not just a sheep. And that's reflected in a story like this one. What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. Now, I don't know first century culture, but I've always found this story a little funny. I mean, I think a lot of guys would be like, oh, it's just one. And I don't know anybody who would throw a party if they found one sheep out of 100. And I think that's why he narrows it down in these three stories. He says, okay, if it's not 1% of sheep, what if it's 10% of your savings? Or what if it's 50% of your children? You know the three stories in Luke 15? So he kind of does a little interesting thing with it. But the point of this one is, even one out of 100 matters because he knows. I just hope you understand, you get to choose. Just because he has all the power doesn't mean you don't get to choose. If you choose to live a life not obeying the Lord, he will let you do that. You just need to know that that really hurts him. Because your relationship with him is very personal. And his love for you, and I think I was a little apprehensive to say this not too many years back, is unconditional. No matter what you do, he still loves you. He just can't bless you when you run away from him. So here's the thing. I'll use Jesse, because he's Jesse, right? 24, nice beard. If Jesus walked in here and knelt down and grabbed you by the hand, man, before he said, get up, we're going, he would say, I made you. And then he would say, Jesse, I know everything about you. I know what scares you. I know what you feel strongly about. I know what you're fighting. I know what you've been thinking about. I know what's coming. You don't. I do. I know what's coming. I know everything about you, and I promise that I can protect you because I already know. Let's go. What's Jesse going to do? If he believes that Jesus knows everything about him, how could he stay seated? That's the power of Jesus. And you've got to experience that. We're going to use words this week like experience, that connection, that fellowship. Every day you have to think, Jesus is with me. He made me. He knows every single thing about me. I'm never alone. I'm never alone with Jesus. That's a cause of fear for some people, not for me. The opposite. Let me give you a third thing before time runs out. In the text, it's not just about you sitting there while he holds your hand. There's a little more going on. I mean, ultimately, he's making an argument so that you will do something. Remember, we're not just saying, let me teach you some things about Jesus, and you feel and experience his connection, and then, you know, sermon over. No, there's things to do. There are things to do. I'm going to show you four of them in a minute. There are things to do. My thing is, you can't get from here to here without this. You just can't. Not consistently. It's consistency. So he comes back and he says, all right, I've got some things for you to do. And if you'll go with me back to our text, look at verses 3 and 4 again. John 10, headed back to John 10. Looking in verses 3 and 4, we're drawing most of our points from there, verses 3 and 4. To him the doorkeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. He leads them out. Watch this. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him, because they know his voice. This is a lot like Psalm 23. He leads them behind quiet waters. Let me tell you something really awesome about Jesus. It's one of my favorite things about Jesus. He doesn't just lure you with sweet talk. You know, like, I made you, and I know you, and I died for you. And then lures you out of the building and says, okay, go that way. And expects you to walk home on your own. Jesus doesn't set you up and then fail you. Jesus does lead you out. He says, hey, Jesse, let's go, man. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's make this real. And then he says, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to go first. I'm going to go first. I'm going to fight the battles. I'm going to clear the path. I'm going to pave the way. And all I really want you to do is follow me. That's what's awesome about Jesus. He doesn't pull you out and say, hey, go figure it out from here. He says, I'm going first. I want you behind me. Very similar to Psalm 23. He leads me beside these quiet waters. He doesn't say go. He says come. And to me, that's a pretty huge difference. Because if he says go, I've got to do it on my own. If he says come, I'm just believing in his power and letting him lead the way. Massive difference in the way we sort of conceptualize what it means to serve Jesus Christ. I've got some verses for this. I think we got time to look at one. Look at Hebrews chapter 4, just really quickly, and then I'll make some observations here. Hebrews chapter 4, this idea of a high priest. You say, well, where is he then, Chris? I mean, he's going ahead of me, and I don't see him. Well, what I'm here to tell you is you can actually begin to see him. That's what I'm here to tell you. Remember that time, was it Elijah or Elisha, and the servant was like, we're in big trouble, and they pulled the veil off the servant's eyes, and what did he see? He saw a mountainside filled with angels and chariots of fire. What I'm telling you is you can actually begin to take those blinders off. You can see Jesus. But what I want you to see about that is where he has gone, where his presence actually is ahead of us in heaven. Therefore, verse 14, Hebrews 4:14. Since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, because of all of that, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Where do I find my help? I'll tell you where I find my help. Knowing that everything I go through, Jesus has already gone through. I get a lot of strength out of that. And also knowing that where I'm going, he already is. I have no doubts about heaven. I have no doubts about life after death. I have no doubts about God because Jesus already traveled the path and defeated death and took it. I'm just following in his footsteps. What I want you to understand, go back to John 15, will help us too. I want you to understand that there is not a single thing in your faith that Jesus will ask you to do that he has not already done first. I want to make four arguments for that. They're not up here, but you might make note of them. Number one, do you think Jesus wants you to do God's will? How many of you think that right now, above everything else, he wants you to do what God says? You believe that? Do you know that he already did that? He came to this earth and he did God's will. He's not saying, go do God's will. He's saying, follow me. Look in John 15. I was just reading this with some friends the other day and just threw it into this lesson for today. But in John 15:10, he said, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Jesus, why do you want me to follow God? Because I follow God. And I'm your shepherd. You're going to hear it in a minute when we get into this humanism business in the hour. This load of month-old, dried-out backyard baloney that we're selling people, that you can follow Jesus and not obey God's word, is idiocy. And it's destroying people. How could I follow Jesus without doing what Jesus did? Following Jesus means obeying the commandments of God because Jesus obeyed the commandments of God. Does that make sense? That's why we do it. I'll give you a second one. Submission and baptism. Submission and baptism. We're going to talk about that, Lord willing, on Friday night. Come into the water. Unity in diversity is ridiculous. Unity from diversity in the water. Now, there's something I can get my mind wrapped around. We're going to talk about that. Why should I be baptized? Preacher Kent's always talking about being baptized and washed away my sins, but I believe in Jesus and I trust in all these things. Why should? Hey, I got a new argument for you why you should be baptized. Because Jesus was baptized. How about that? He went first. When you're being baptized, you're not walking some new plane of work, show how great you are. You're just saying, that's the way Jesus went, and that's the way I'm going. Now, there's all these theological questions. You know, why was Jesus baptized? He had no sin. Why? Mr. Heaton's going to cover that next week. He's going to preach all about it. I don't know or care right now. All I know is the Bible says, four words, Jesus was baptized to fulfill all righteousness. You know why Jesus was baptized? Because God wanted him to be. End of sermon. That's a short sermon. Sermon over. You know why you need to be baptized? Because Jesus was, and he told you to follow him. Except you've got sin, and he wants to take it away. Benefits are tremendous. Look, doing God's will, submitting in baptism, serving other people. You know a lot of this stuff. Serving other people. There's all this preaching about loving God by serving and loving your brother and being faithful to worship service. You've got this great crowd. Don't you do this to me. I'm just going to pause here for dramatic effect. Don't you do this to me. Don't you come this morning and fill this building, be all about God, give me a high five when this thing's over, and talk about how great Jesus is and how much he means to you, and then desert me all week long. Don't you do that. Amen? Thank you. All right, I got 20 of you on board. We got started. You know it's about God, it's not about me, but you're either going to encourage me or discourage me, and I prefer that you do the first thing. This whole idea of submitting and really being faithful to worship, if you can, if you're here, and serving other people, you know why we're supposed to do that? Because Jesus went first. He washed those feet. He gave his life. There's nothing he wants you to do that he hasn't already done. And then the last one here is faith unto death. Death is scary. There's not a person in this room that's been there yet. Death is scary. I don't care who you are, how faithful you are. Facing that last moment of breath and going on to what comes after is kind of terrifying. Let me tell you what Jesus did. He said, I did that already. I'm promising you that when you die, there's life after death. And so that you'll know it, so that you'll have no doubts, I will die first, and I will be raised first, reveal myself first, and be ascended into heaven. Now, all of your doubts can be allayed. They can be put aside because Jesus went first. Number three, there's not a place he wants me to go. Obedience, baptism, service, death with courage. He is not done. And then the last one, and we're going to run out of time, but that's okay. You know a lot about this. The big one that he makes at the end is, I'm going to lay down my life for you. Look back in John 10. The three points I've made so far in the early part, they're in the first four or five verses, that first section. The second section, when he returns to it, is when he says, let me make the best argument I've got for you, that you might come with me. He said, I lay down my life for you. I am the good shepherd, verse 11. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Hired hand's a good guy, but he's not going to do that. He goes on to explain in verse 14, they know my own and my own know me. And as he picks up a little bit later in verse 17, he says, I lay down my life. I lay down my life so that I may take it up again. He goes on to say, nobody took it from me. I laid it down for you. Nobody made me do it. I did it because I believe in you. So again, lastly, if Jesus comes in and kneels down beside you, he's going to grab your hand, look you right in the eye. He's going to say, I made you. I know everything about you. I promise I will never ask you to go anywhere that I won't go first. I promise you that. And just so you'll know how much this means to me, he's going to hold you in the hand, by your hand, look you right in the eye. Just so you know, I want you to know that I didn't die for mankind. I died for you. You, who I know everything about. I died for you. And I knew that that would be powerful but limited. So I also raised up from the dead for you. I sit at the right hand of God for you. I gave my life for you. We can look at other passages like Romans 5 where it talks about maybe somebody would die for a good man, but who would die for me? So unworthy. Jesus is still holding your hand, and you're thinking that. You're thinking, who would die for me? He's holding your hand, looking you in the eye, and he said, I did. No one else would have, but I did. How can you not obey Jesus when he's made these amazing arguments? I think a lot about this. We get near in these last few minutes. I think about, you know, we got all this PETA stuff going, and I'm not going to be political this week. There's so many things to say. By the way, good job in 2016. I was a little worried about you guys, but you pulled it out. Strike that from the record. Just nothing political here. Nothing political about this. Forget that. Forget I said that. Imagine if over in some other country there was a guy who was watching sheep. They're not his sheep, but, you know, everybody's got to have a job. So he's watching these sheep. And, you know, a lion comes out and attacks the sheep. What's the guy going to do? He's going to bail out. But let's say he decides to fight that lion. And he fights that lion. Let's say he owns a sheep. Let's go ahead and raise the stakes. He owns sheep. They're sheep, though, right? I mean, sheep. I mean, we just like wear them and stuff. I don't know. We even eat them sometimes. They're sheep. He fights the lion. He saves every sheep. But he dies. And you're over here in America wearing your shirts. And you hear about that on the news. What are your thoughts on that? What an idiot. They're sheep. We'll put up some statue of him, and then, you know, we'll find some tweet from 5 years ago, and we'll take the statue back down. Sorry. So sorry.
All right.
I live in Texas. We're about to start building the wall on the north side. But anyway, all right, I'm done. Good grief. All right. You'd think, what an idiot. Because, I mean, they're just sheep, you know? They're just sheep. But then if a few days later they were looking to figure out what to do with those sheep, and they thought, we ought to go check on those sheep because they're probably wandering around. And they got out there, and he was standing there at his post. He died. He was on the news. He's an idiot. He died. He's not an idiot. You know why he died? Because he knew he had the power to come back. He saved them, and then he came back to keep protecting them. Well, that news story would be different, wouldn't it? We'd all be on a plane right now, headed over there to find out more about this guy. If he would do that for sheep, well, what could he do for me? I'm just here to tell you about Jesus today. Jesus laid down his life for you, and it would have been noble but empty. A lot of people have done that. Then he came back to life, and now he's your shepherd, king, high priest, and friend. I hope you think a lot about that as we get into this week and we challenge you to do things, because if you're experiencing that kind of connection, if you're seeing him, there's all these sermons about whether you're allowed to talk to Jesus or pray to Jesus. I don't want to get off in that. I don't know what's going on over here in Florida, but I've got a king I can talk to, I'll tell you that. I can see him, I can feel his presence, and I can thank him for everything he does for me. He wouldn't be my king if I couldn't. But then, you got to make some decisions, and we've got just a minute or two left. Just a minute or two left. In the same text, I just want you to see verses 3, 4, and 5, and then we'll wrap this thing up. Verses 3, 4, and 5. To him the doorkeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name. He leads them out. When he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Just some final thoughts here. Final thoughts. Number one. If you believe all that about Jesus, I need to encourage you to start listening for him, because he is speaking to you. He may not be right there on his knees holding your hand, although I think that's probably more real description of what's going on in the spiritual world than most of us realize. I actually think that's pretty accurate. He is speaking to you. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight on how he speaks to me. But he's speaking. Question is, are you listening? People just plugging along, going to church on Sunday morning, you know, go live their week, pushed and pulled, whatever. You're not listening. You need to start listening. Because I'm going to tell you right now, Jesus is speaking to you, and he's got some awesome things to say. Amazing things. Personal things. Secondly, you need to know there's actually a lot of people speaking to you, not just Jesus. A lot of people sound a lot like Jesus speaking to you. Telling you what you need to believe and what you need to do and how important it is. And 99.9% of them are liars, except for Jesus himself. But you've got to have the ability to differentiate between these voices that you're hearing. Is this God? Is it not God? Is it Jesus? That's going to take Bible study, and I hope this week we're able to do that. And then lastly, we're not really offering an invitation this morning, but we kind of are, because it's time to get up. If you're following along today, and in a very spiritual sense, not a physical sense, we're just using that to illustrate. In a spiritual sense, Jesus has told you all of these things, and he's gotten up, and he's walked through that water, and you have not? I think it's time to follow him. Do you think it's time to follow him? I think it is. In whatever way that he might instruct us. I trust him. I trust him with my family. It's a generational faith. You set this kind of legacy for your family, and they're going to trust him like that too. And we're going to build a family of faith. Hey, thank you guys for your attention today. Time's up. Appreciate it very much.